Welcome to the Global Heart Podcast. I'm your host, Pablo Perel, Senior Science Advisor at the World Heart Federation. In this special episode, we focus on obesity and cardiovascular disease, the topic of the World Heart Report 2025. I'm really delighted to be joined by the two leading authors of this report here in Geneva, where we are having our summit. We have Professor Maria Chiara Di Cesari, Director of the Institute of Public Health and Wellbeing at the University of Essex, and Dr. Francisco Lopez Jimenez, Professor of Medicine and Chair of the Division of Preventive Cardiology at the Mayo Clinic. I hope you are enjoying Geneva, and welcome. So let's start with you, Francisco. Obesity and cardiovascular disease, this is not something new. Why would you say, and we at WHF, we always do reports that we expect that they will have an impact and are important. Why is it important for the cardiovascular community to talk about obesity and cardiovascular disease now?
Well, first of all, thank you, Pablo, for inviting me to this podcast. It's really a pleasure and a big honor to participate here. Well, I believe that a report on obesity and heart disease was really largely overdue for the cardiovascular community in the world. And the reason is because overweight and obesity together represent the most prevalent cardiovascular risk factor. And not only that, obesity also causes some of the other major cardiovascular risk factors like hypertension, dyslipidemia, diabetes. So this is going to be of great interest to the cardiovascular community, we hope, and also serving our patients around the world.
Okay, I mean, we will get into some of these more medical or biological aspects of obesity and cardiovascular disease that you cover extensively in the report. But before that, maybe I would like to go to you, Chiara, and you've been involved and you have led also the other previous report of WHF. Was it anything particularly different about this one on obesity? The previous one, just to remind our audience, were on general epidemiology and cardiovascular disease and risk factors, an overall view, and the last one was on air pollution and cardiovascular disease. So what was unique about this one and anything particularly in terms of balance between medicine and public health?
Thank you, Paolo, and thank you for inviting me today. It's very happy to join this chat today. So I think you are right. So I was involved in the previous two reports, and this one is particularly interesting because, as you said, there is a biological element, right, in terms of obesity. We know that it's a disease. We know that some people may have a different microbiome. They may have a different metabolism. So that is like the more biological element. But I don't think that can explain alone what we are observing in terms of prevalence and trends in obesity. So just to give you an idea, nowadays, I mean, the estimates suggest that we have 1 billion people that are that have overweight or obesity. These are like 900 million adults and 150 million children with obesity. And this is a very large number, and it's four times more than what we were observing in 1990. So it's really trying to understand what other factors are playing an important role in this increase, in this trend. And I think that we need to go beyond biological factors. We need to look at the wider determinants of health. This means the environmental, the social, economic factors that may influence our obesity trends.
We come later to the figures, and I want to eventually to zoom in some of those figures. But I think also what is interesting about this is obesity, you can look at it from a public health perspective, but also from a clinical perspective. And I can imagine that working on a report like this, you have this tension as well of the different views. And I think that also make it quite unique. And it is a tension, but it's also what it makes, I think, the report quite interesting.
I think it's that conversation that we really need to have if we want to tackle the epidemic of obesity, is to come together, the clinical side and the public health side, to be able to really understand how to tackle obesity in what we say at upstream, so at the very beginning, before it even shows, and how we can tackle the problem once that is present.
I want to come back to you, Francisco. And I mean, with this kind of tension between more public health and the clinical. I'm moving now to the clinical, although I think this conversation, of course, means that both of you, if you represent the public health and the clinical, you are talking and have a lot of common points. But there are certain things that are clearly for different audience. So for the clinical one, in your first response, you were saying about the importance of obesity and cardiovascular disease. But maybe going back to that, you think this is recognized as a disease for cardiologists? Do they see really as a clinical condition? And does it get the attention that a clinical condition has when you see a patient? And maybe you can also summarize some of the clinical aspects of the report. So in more detail, what is well established in terms of links between obesity and cardiovascular disease, and what are the clinical interventions that we know that work and that you summarize in the report?
I agree with you that a lot of the attention has been placed on obesity, on the obesity epidemic, primarily from the public health standpoint. But we haven't seen a lot of reports, probably haven't seen one, that addresses the global epidemic of obesity, combining the public health side of it and the clinical aspect of it, because I think that's really relevant. Indeed, obesity has been one of the perhaps the most neglected cardiovascular risk factor. I don't know why, but the reality is that we hear a lot about hypertension, we hear a lot about diabetes and the importance of treating lipids, but we don't hear a lot about obesity, perhaps more recently, but over the last 20, 30 years, that hasn't been really the case. And that is in despite of the overwhelming evidence linking obesity and cardiovascular disease. And what is important to underscore is that the relationship is not just as a risk factor, because a risk factor might have nothing to do with causing the problem, but obesity causes cardiovascular disease. It's in the causal pathway of it. And I think that's very, very relevant. Why? Because that means that by addressing and treating obesity, we can indeed change the outcomes. And this is what we have seen more recently in numerous cardiovascular outcomes research trials.
So going into those relationships, can you summarize a little bit of what we know exactly about obesity and which sure. cardiovascular outcomes?
Yeah, indeed, multiple studies have linked obesity to cardiovascular disease, showing that individuals with obesity or overweight are more likely to develop coronary artery disease, heart failure, particularly heart failure with preserved ejection fraction, atrial fibrillation, sudden death, ventricular arrhythmias, and so forth and so on. However, the relationship years ago was thought to be just mediated through the other risk factors like hypertension, diabetes, and high cholesterol. But plenty of evidence had shown that the association is actually independent, that obesity per se, just obesity, independent of all the other risk factors, can increase the risk for each one of those conditions. And it turns out that adipose tissue is a very metabolically active tissue, is the largest endocrine organ in our body, and therefore can harm the heart in ways independent of the traditional risk factors.
And the other thing is, I mean, that's interesting, and I think one of the interesting part of the report and this link. The other thing is also there are new progresses in terms of treatment of obesity. No, I mean, what are the clinical ways that we have to treat obesity, people living with obesity now?
Yes, we address obesity from different angles. Number one, and the cornerstone of the treatment for obesity is lifestyle modification. And we can talk about behavioral programs and those that have shown to be the most effective programs would be programs that are well structured, that have a curriculum that teach and empower patients to lose weight. But in more recent years, we have seen significant advances in the management of obesity using what are so-called anti-obesity medications or weight loss medications, showing really amazing results. And that definitely shows that the landscape of the treatment of obesity is changing and will continue to change in the next few days. But there are other therapies also effective, like weight loss surgery or bariatric surgery, that in some situations might be needed and might be important to consider.
And is this reflected in the curriculum of the new doctors that are training, for example, in cardiology? Do they receive more training in terms of how to treat people with obesity?
It is, but in my opinion, it's still not enough. You know, considering how common and how prevalent overweight and obesity are, I don't think that a couple of lectures in medical school is enough to empower new doctors to treat obesity.
Thank you, Francisco. Now, let's zoom out and look at the big figures. And there's a lot of really interesting data and figures in the report, Chiara. I know it's a difficult question to ask you, just to say, highlight a few that you think, if you have a few minutes with a policymaker, that you want to just to get her attention or his attention to say this is an important issue, or of a headline of a newspaper. Which are the key figures that you mentioned already a few, but just share with us which would be, you think, the key figures from the report?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I said, four times more people living with overweight obesity nowadays compared to 1990. And the future estimates suggest that in 2050, we will have 2 out of 3 adults living with overweight of obesity. And this is going to be a huge burden on the health system. Now, if we look also, and I will then go back to the prevalence of obesity, but if we look also at the impact of high BMI on cardiovascular disease, which is really the focus of this report, is linking, as Francisco was saying, linking the obesity with cardiovascular diseases. High BMI, high body mass index, is linked to 3.7 million deaths. 2.2 are due to cardiovascular diseases. So the connection is there and is very, very strong evidence. In terms of trends, so what is happening is that in the past we thought that obesity was a problem of high-income countries, but this is not the case anymore. So what we see is that trends are going faster in low and middle income countries. So if we really want to, if you want some numbers around countries that show the highest level, so we have the Oceania. So just to give you some example, Tonga, American Samoa, we are talking about 70 to 75% of the population. So we have a huge amount of people with obesity. And then the follow-up by North Africa and Middle East. So Egypt, Qatar, we are talking about 40%. And more or less some differences there by sex, but we are talking of that level. So 1 out of 2, 1 or even more, 7 out of 10. I mean, we are really talking about large numbers. So I think that is we need to understand what that means and translate it for a government and a health system in terms of burden and cost. Just to give you an idea, the overall cost for obesity was estimated to be $2 trillion.
Thank you, Chiara. If I can get some of the headlines. I mean, huge problem, 1 billion people increasing in low and middle income countries, huge economic cost, and also some, particularly the low and middle income countries where it's increasing. But there were also, I think, some interesting aspects that in general is neglected, is about sex differences. Of course, there are many differences according to regions, but I would like for you to expand a little bit of the two aspects. The sex differences in terms of people living with obesity, and also the rural and urban differences.
Yes, so what we see is that women have higher levels of obesity than men, and also that the association of obesity with cardiovascular diseases is stronger in women compared to men. Just to give you an idea, South Asia, Middle East, and North Africa, we are talking about 40% of prevalence of obesity among women. And the difference is really large. So in majority of the countries, women have a higher prevalence of obesity, and that can get to up to 30% difference, like in South Africa. So we are talking about something happening there. And often this is can explain different way, not just to the maybe to the to biological differences, but also that women tend to, for example, to have more food insecurity. So maybe relying more on unhealthy foods. Before was relying not on food at all, but now we are on the other side, on unhealthy foods. Access to physical activity. So, you know, the safety for women to go out and walk and be active. So a series of factors that are, in fact, discriminating women from having a healthy weight. The story with urban and rural, again, is a bit our idea that, you know, obesity is from high-income countries, is from urban, because, you know, we don't have space to walk. But in fact, what we have seen over the past decades is that the increase in the prevalence of obesity has been faster in rural areas. And this means that the gap between urban and rural areas has been closing over the past decades. And again, this may be to differences and changes in diets, changes in the type of activities that people do. But what I want to say is that it's not anymore a problem of a specific, it's not anymore a problem of a specific group, but it's opening and in fact is becoming a problem where there is more deprivation, where there is less access to healthy food, where there is where there is all these other factors.
So I mean, policymakers, they need to understand these numbers to also to see which are the target populations and maybe act on that. So I think hopefully this will, I mean, what we want to do with this report is that they reach decision makers and also will be helpful in that sense. But let's go again back and zoom in into patients now. We're going from zooming out and zooming in from public health to clinical aspects. And I want to go back to Francisco. I want to look at some of the clinical challenges that you, I mean, or cardiologists, doctors in general might have when they're treating particularly cardiovascular disease on people living with obesity. I mean, you touch on that. I know this is an area that you've been working, Francisco. So can you summarize some of these challenges?
Yeah, certainly. One challenge, I will say we begin by the reality that many patients don't consider obesity as a real problem. And that might be perhaps the consequence of doctors focusing so much on cholesterol, on blood pressure and diabetes and other risk factors. So even patients don't recognize the need or the importance of addressing obesity. And that's one challenge. So we have to educate patients about that. Number two is that because of the bias and the stigma that exists around obesity, many patients feel even afraid to mention that or to suggest or say that they actually would like to weigh less or to lose some weight. So those are, from the patient side, some barriers that we face and we can address. As clinicians, we also face the challenge that treating obesity is not that simple. We really need multidisciplinary teams where we can have the help of nurses and dietitians, nutritionists, behavioral experts. So ideally, in the perfect world, we will have multidisciplinary teams addressing obesity, but we know that that's not a possibility in many places, and therefore clinicians will have to feel empowered to treat obesity alone. And finally, another major challenge we face treating obesity in the clinical practice is that obesity treatment, unfortunately, is not covered by many, or probably most insurances in many places of the world, is not covered by national health systems in many places of the world. And when it is restricted to a very few individuals. So that's something that we hope will change, because right now, more than half of the patients receiving treatment for obesity are actually paying out of pocket.
And also, I think in the report you mentioned on the other side also, when you're treating other conditions, for people living with obesity. You know that it has some specificities and some challenges. So if you're treating other cardiovascular conditions, that's something that need to be. I don't know how well it is covered today in the training of a particular cardiologists.
Certainly, we don't get enough information in scientific or clinical practice guidelines in the particular challenges that patients living with obesity have when we treat cardiovascular disease in the presence of obesity. And we don't get enough information about the challenges treating obesity in patients with cardiovascular disease. And that in itself is complex enough that would require probably another podcast. But I think we can say that some medications, for example, are not as effective in patients with obesity as they are in patients with normal weight. And that has to do with the metabolism, the pharmacokinetics of the medicine that behave differently in a person with excess weight. And like that, there are many other challenges that we hope are included more and more in clinical guidelines.
For our audience, I mean, you'll see the section on this and also some important references to expand on that. As you said, maybe it could be a podcast in itself, and maybe something we do in the future with you, Francisco. I would like to also to talk a little bit about the challenges with you, Chiara, but not the challenges, of course, in clinical management, but the challenges in terms of you as a demographer and epidemiologist, you work with data. What were the challenges when you had to decide it, what data to use, what definitions to use, what metrics to use for this report?
Yes, before I go there, I just wanted to add something on what Francisco was saying, because I think that the situation in which we are now is partly due because for long we have identified obesity as an individual choice. And I think that is really important. And this is something that we are trying to make it clear in the report, that it's not an individual choice, but is the consequences of many factors that are influencing what is the outcome of our weight. So I think it's really important, because I think that we are behind in the fight to obesity and the associated conditions, because we have been seeing this for long as almost, you know, someone being lazy, someone being not wanted to have a healthy lifestyle. So saying that the report, we are trying also to break those myths, right? Then clearly through different aspects. So in terms of data, yes. So this report had an element, a strong element of data, epidemiological data. We use different sources. So for the audience, we are using the global burden of disease to look at the association between high BMI and cardiovascular mortality. We are using the NCD risk factor collaboration data for the prevalence of obesity. And these data are the most up-to-date estimates that we have. But what I think we are still very behind, especially to inform policymakers, is that we have a lot of information at global, so country level, sex, age, we have that information. But we lack the granularity of the other factors. So yes, we have sex, we have urban, rural. But for example, if we want to look at education, how the prevalence of obesity is changing across different groups of the population, there we start having a lot of problem, because comparability becomes really hard with the data that we have. And not all the surveys, not all the data we have that granularity. And then I can go on other characteristic, ethnicity, you know, other factors. So we are somehow, we have good estimates, global estimates, country level estimates, but I think that we really need to work to increase the granularity of our data, because then we can go to policymakers and tell them with a good degree of certainty where the problem is, in which group of the population, which group of the population has been neglected in supporting a healthy weight.
Each of these topics can go, we can have a specific podcast on it. I mean, one just follow up on that. We use BMI, but of course there are other metrics, and I don't want to go in detail in all the discussion, but is BMI the only one globally available, and which are the other metrics?
So yes, body mass index BMI has been is the one that if you want each survey collect very easily nowadays the weight and height. But there has been a lot of discussion around how much BMI, and you know there are it's a continuous variable. There are different thresholds that we use to define overweight, obesity, and different class of obesities. But it's not the best metric. So because we are not measuring, for example, we know that, for example, waist circumference is also an important metric that is strongly associated with the risk of cardiovascular diseases, waist hip ratio, or adiposity. So if you want, there are metrics that could give a better idea of the adiposity within an individual. However, most of these, or they are invasive, or they are not so standardized. So waist circumference is one of those, right? It's like it moves, it's still where that measure is taken. While with height and weight, we have a very good measure. Now, said that, the evidence of the association between BMI and different outcomes is there. So I think that for this type of exercise, epidemiological evidence is still the best metric we have.
That's always an interesting discussion.
And, when you navigate into epidemiology and clinical, even if clinically there might be a better measure, epidemiologically that's what you have. And I think, for me, a fascinating topic that we can have even a podcast on that from the epidemiological point of view. I would like to finish with the key recommendations. I mean, for a report, of course, it's very important to finish with key recommendations. So maybe I'll start with you, Francisco, and tell me what are, if you can summarize, what are the key clinical recommendations from this report?
Yes, the key recommendations we include in the report would be identifying obesity in the clinical practice, initiating treatment when possible, or referring patients for appropriate treatment if the person doesn't feel comfortable treating the patient, and addressing the importance of weight management, not only with our patients, but also in our workplace, our colleagues, cardiologists, nurses, allied health personnel, increase the awareness about the importance of treating obesity.
Thank you, Francisco. And from a public health or more policy perspective?
So I think we can summarize in community-focused or system-level intervention. So community-focused, I'm just thinking something like urban planning, education awareness in the population, and starting as soon as possible as children, I mean, in children, to understand, for example, healthy eating. And we provide very nice, so I suggest the audience to go on the report, because we provide some good example around the world how different countries are tackling these community level interventions. The system level is really looking at how we can, for example, and we already have policies to regulate the food market. So we have evidence of sugar tax, front package labeling. So all these other activities that and policies that we can implement to ensure that we have clarity when a product is healthy or unhealthy. And then the last things is that I think we have a responsibility as a community to tackle the commercial determinants of health, and particularly how industry is targeting unhealthy eating, like with processed food that are rich in calories but poor in nutrients.
Thank you, Chiara. And just to finish, I always ask our guests a question. This is outside the report. Is your understanding of what is global cardiovascular research? I mean, as you know, I mean, Global Heart, our journal, that's our scope. But it's interesting to hear that, I mean, the definition is not very straightforward. So it's quite challenging. I'll ask you you need to say this in one sentence, not more than that. And just to tell you, I mean, everyone comes with different definitions. So don't worry. I mean, I don't think there is a right definition. So I just want to understand what you would say is global cardiovascular research. And Francisco, if you want to go first.
I think it's international collaboration to resolve urgent and important cardiovascular disease problems.
Thank you, Francisco. And Chiara, you there to have a go?
I think it's a community effort to ensure that the heart, the health of the heart of people is allowed for a healthy life.
Thank you. It has been a fascinating discussion. And I think if I started the podcast asking why this is important for the cardiovascular community, Francisco, and I think hopefully by now those that listen to the podcast can see why it is important. I think you made a strong case about this. Thank you again, Chiara and Francisco, for sharing your insights. And again, thank you for your work on this vital report. To our listeners, you can find the link to the World Heart Report 2025 below our podcast, and hopefully we'll have shortly a published version in the Global Heart Journal of the report, as we always do. And as always, stay tuned for our monthly Global Heart podcast, where we'll keep exploring the latest in global cardiovascular research. Thanks for listening, and until next time.